Twisted listeners. We are...
Sorry,
okay, I know you
don't know what just freaking
just happened, but Kim's glasses literally just jumped off of her face.
In the mic. I have my new semi bun that I've been doing, and it's on top of my head. And somebody said, I like your hair like that. And I said, I don't know what exactly that inflection meant, but I'm gonna
like
take
with it. A question mark. I don't
it really was like a question mark. Yeah. And I just was like, thank you. I will take the compliment.
All right. So how are you? How is your week? You're closing in on the winter holiday break.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. It's good from my end. Coaching, I've just been super duper busy. And we had a new teacher meeting today. I did PD all day Monday.
So new teacher like started in August, new teachers, or do first, you have new teachers starting in January?
First, second, third year teachers. We have monthly meetings. Mm-hmm. And I had a lot of good questions. It's a great group. A lot about grading, a lot about behavior. And we're planning our PD for January. And I really just want to come home and just not worry about school. I have some extra responsibilities, which I won't go into detail, but you definitely know what those are.
Yeah.
That's going to be taking up a lot of my time, and I'm happy to take some workload off of some other teachers, but I'm finding myself in the mode of needing to, I actually did ask for them to take something off my plate in order to
take on the new responsibility. And did they?
Yes.
Happily, good.
They had no problem with it. I went to my friend and I said, look, I'm doing these things and I can't do these things. And she just actually rescheduled all my stuff right in front of me. And with admin, they were like, okay. I was like, oh.
Good. I think that is what needs to start happening more in education. So coming in January, I'm really excited about this. It'll probably be towards the end of January. We're going to do a podcast on something called de-implementation.
Yes, I'm excited.
De-implementation. So we are actually, it's a book called De-implementation. And the author of the book is actually going to come on our podcast, which I'm so excited about. His name is Peter DeWitt. And so if you want to be prepped before our podcast, the book is called... So the book is called De-implementation, Creating the Space to Focus on What Works. So basically, think about it. You know what implementation means. De-implementation, unimplementing things so that you can do the things that do work. So I can't wait to read the book and talk to Peter DeWitt.
I'm excited too, because we're always talking about taking things off the plates. And one of the things that I read in there on the kind of synopsis of the book was that to minimize the amount of formative assessments that you give. And we have talked on the other end of that spectrum that we need to give more formatives. And I'm really interested to listen to his philosophy on that, because I mean, I talk all the time about formative assessment and different ways of formative and not grading all the formatives, because really you shouldn't put formative assessment in the grade book ever. It should just be informing you of how the kids are doing, but we have to put them in the grade book. So I'm interested in delving deeper into all of that.
Yeah, I can't wait. That'll be a really good conversation. And that is the part of education that I kind of miss, are the conversations.
Yes.
And the data. And so I'm really happy that we're going to be doing that.
Yeah, I went to a meeting all day yesterday for PBIS, which is kind of a national thing. And we had a lot of good conversations and we just got a lot done. It's quite the group that we're in. Everybody has a sarcastic sense of humor and nobody's a fuddy-duddy and we're a little inappropriate. So it's like 15 of us. They pick like the most smart-ass people in the world to be on the PBIS committee.
Which is funny because, I mean, PBIS language is a lot of not smart-assy language.
No, it's not. Like one of the guys was like, we call it PBIS. And he wants a cape. And we just roll off of each other, which is fun. And so, I mean, I guess I'm in a place where I'm enjoying, and I was just telling you, I really appreciate my admin. And I'm in a place where the people with whom I work are lovely. And I'm very grateful that I'm not in the classroom right now. I'm starting not to feel guilty about that anymore because I can't. But
yeah.
But I did wear Stripper Santa in the admin meet. I go to the admin meetings for like 10 minutes every Monday, and I introduced Stripper Santa, and there were a couple people who remember me wearing it from four or five years ago.
Yeah.
Busted out laughing. And in my admin, I was so they're just like, nothing really phases them. They just looked at it and they're like, oh, that's cool. And then looked away. Like, had I worn that in elementary school, maybe that would have been a funnier reaction.
I don't know.
But it wasn't obviously that he was naked stripping, but.
No, because he wasn't naked at all. He had his full uni on. Do you think Santa calls his like what he wears? Is it a uniform to him, or is it a costume, or is it just like, what would Santa call his special Christmas outfit?
I would say it's his uniform.
His uniform?
Well, while we're talking about fictitious characters deciding things, my PowerPoint, I'm very big in my slide templates. Like, they have to be cute. They have to be like perfect. And I go to like SlideGo and all these other places to get the most unique templates.
That's shocking to all of you who haven't. No, it's not at all shocking.
So I don't know what happened, but I was in the middle of 80 things, but I was like, shit, I have to get this new teacher presentation together. Because what I do is I get all their survey results from questions about how are things going, and I put it in and we talk about it. And it was a gnome theme. And I was laughing my ass off because of our gnome conversations. And on every slide, I have a gnome pun hanging with my gnomies. There's no place like home. And I literally, like, as I was presenting, I was cracking myself up.
Because we talked about gnome porn, didn't we?
We did, gnome porn. We sure did.
And I think we had, it was titled Gnome Porn.
It was entitled Gnome Porn. And my AP was just like, so we were talking about formative assessment, and my AP said, like, Kim, it was really, they said, Kim failed her driver's test 3 times. I was like, no, that was 5 times. And the other admin's like, well, it's a good thing that she's not on an average of those 5 times and that we just know that she's driving. And they just kept going on about my driving. But then the gnomes came back up. And I honestly thought about just quickly putting a clip in of our gnome porn ad because.
Oh, my God.
Anyway.
Yeah, that would have been fabulous, except that. I mean, you're still trying to fly a little bit under the radar, and that would definitely have not been under the radar at all.
I don't know.
Speaking of calling you out, did you see it was Mandy Brooke? It's Mandy Brooke Official on Instagram. Oh,
she responded.
Yes. And she's like, she goes, ease up on Kim. She doesn't mean it.
She said that to you.
and then I said, you have no idea how freaking spot on that was. And she's like, I love this so much. So Mandy Brooke Official, you should check her
out. So she was singing a song in her car about, even if I have my GPS on, I'm still going to get lost. And she went on and on about it. And Jen posts that I think it was like first thing in the morning. I was dying laughing, and I posted it back on mine. And she messaged both of us, and she I said, yeah, this is perfect. Like, you wrote that song for me, because it is true.
She did. I saw somewhere else where she was like, dang, she just called Kim right on out.
was that on your feed?
I think so, or yeah. I don't know.
Oh, it's perfect. Anybody who, like, everybody in admin was giving me shit today about my lack of driving skills.
Okay, but then I was trying to think, because I was gonna tell her something, and then I'm like, I don't know how that works, so I'm not sure. And I would have had to have drawn, like, I would have had to have made a diagram. Haven't you told me before that you will take 3 rights to avoid a left?
Yes.
But does that get you to where you need to be?
In most cases, yes. I don't like to, I'm like UPS, I don't like to take left-hand turns. And I made the mistake of...
I feel like it puts you right back where you were.
I just try never to, if there's no light at the left-hand turn.
Oh, well, like a green turn, like a turn arrow light.
I will go with that. But if there's no light, then I won't do it. I hate it. And I made the mistake of giving a, like, what is one thing about you that people don't know at some meeting? And I'm like, I don't take left-hand turns. And that has bit me in the arse. I don't know how many times at work, because I don't like it. I don't like to be in a perilous situation when I don't need to be. And that's,
I mean, it's actually very like life affirming.
I wouldn't go
value. You value your life to the point that you won't take left-hand turns.
Mm-mm, no.
That's, do you worry about it? Like, if you know you're going somewhere and it involves a left-hand turn, do you worry?
Sometimes, yeah.
Like, okay, because I remember one place I lived there, to get into the Target parking lot, you had to turn left across traffic with no light.
No, I wouldn't go there.
You wouldn't go there. Wow.
I probably wouldn't go there. I'd find it. Unless it was, there was nobody on each side, like, because I will wait there and I'm the person that you're honking at. And
that's okay. I'd rather you be safe.
If you're honking at people who are not taking the left-hand turn, everybody out there, that's me or somebody like me. And you honking at me stresses me out more, which results in me not taking the turn, nor navigating to take the turn, or trying to figure out when the best time to take the left-hand turn is, because your ass is honking at me.
So I will tell you that one of the first times I drove, like 16 or 15, I guess, 15, and learning how to drive, my dad had taken me out. Now I think back and I'm like, so I was driving his company car. Now I'm like, wonder why he was teaching me to drive in his company car. That doesn't sound good.
That doesn't sound safe.
No, but I did not know. I will honestly admit that I did not know that you have to yield when you're making a left-hand turn, if you don't have a green arrow. And back in whatever age back in the 1980 something, right? I don't think there were as many green turn arrows as there are.
I don't even think those existed.
They might not have. That would be a good thing to fact check. But I didn't know that when the light turned green and I was turning, that I yielded to oncoming traffic and I almost got us killed.
Oh, holy shit. Well, I'll tell you something. I didn't know you couldn't take a left-hand turn on a red light.
What?
I was.
So like you knew you could turn right on red, but you didn't know that you couldn't also turn right on left?
I was 16. I was driving my 76 Vega. And on the way to school every day, I took a left-hand turn on a red light.
Oh my God.
And I don't know what happened. Or somebody,
maybe that's where your fear of turning left originated.
I don't know what happened. And I now think about how many times
every day
that.
You ran the red light.
I did every day.
Have we talked on the podcast about how I got two red light tickets coming to see you when Drew was a baby? Bringing Brooke over to play, like with baby Drew. Yeah. Twice, like within the same like month.
Yes. Yeah. Because I don't remember the story. I just remember that you were really pissed and it was really freaking funny.
Well, I tried to tell David it wasn't me, that it was him. And he's like, really? Mm-hmm. On a weekday?
Oh, because it took a picture? You're trying to say it was David? The blonde hair?
I was like, this was
okay,
you.
Okay, so if you all don't understand that Jen is a gaslighter, like that is the quintessential thing that you do. She's choking on water. That you get the ticket and a fucking picture. She's choking.
Actually had that happen before. I mean, like I've had that almost happen.
You wouldn't explain to the audience what the hell just happened.
I just took a drink of water and then Kim said that I am a gaslighter, which is really true.
And she's a gaslighter because she's trying to make her husband believe that it was him in the car running the red light when it was clearly Jen in the car running the red light.
I don't mean to gaslight people. I just have a natural talent for trying it.
Oh my God.
literally almost died.
She did. She literally almost drowned standing up.
And now I'm crying. Like, I have tears rolling down my face.
To make your husband believe it was him in the car.
He didn't believe it. I just tried.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, holy crap. Okay.
But so, I've been acute. Yes. I mean, David doesn't use the word gaslighting, but he tells me all the time that the way I quit, like if I ask the kids a question, there's a certain way that I ask it that you really know what the right answer is supposed to be.
That's a teacher skill, I will say.
Yeah.
It's a teacher skill. Oh my God. I don't even know what we're talking about today. So we're still loving the fact that Joe and Gasper were on the podcast, but they just did an episode where Gasper was talking. Here's the thing. If you look at our reactions when Gasper's talking, he is so freaking funny that he keeps going with these stories. So he was talking about the cooking a turkey. And he thought the neck was the penis.
Oh, my God. Yes.
And so I wish we would have talked about cooking turkeys, but anyway, he's funny. We're still happy about that. If you haven't heard that episode with Joe and Gasper, Joe calls me out about my dupe of flare pens. And then Joe decided that he has three different tattoos
yes.
that are actually one tattoo that we called him out on. So,
oh my God, it was so much fun. I had a great time.
Yeah, I did too. All right. So we've got a little bit of a heavy conversation. We're doing the Sunday Rewinds, which we're re-releasing our series on leaving education. And it is doing way better than the first time we released these.
That's crazy.
I mean,
maybe we're more popular now.
Right. But yeah. So Jen was talking to me about...
Yeah. So I have, I was thinking about this because I know that there are so many teachers and you're listening to these leaving education episodes and you're like, wow, that's what I want to do. I want to leave education too. So I got to thinking, and I don't know if you're fully in the teaching world still and not really immersed in the LinkedIn world, you may not yet know that tons of people are being laid off left and right. Every day there are posts about people being laid off. And there are some teachers who transitioned already who are being laid off. So here is my advice for you, because I want you to transition out of education if your heart's not in it anymore. Right. But I want you to be smart about it. So here's my advice. And I'm certainly not like an economic specialist at all. The economy seems pretty shit right now as far as layoffs, all of that. If you can handle... So here's what I wouldn't do. I wouldn't right now march into your principal's office and turn in your letter and say that you're not coming back next year.
No.
Because we need things like health insurance and, well, a salary. And I would say that unless your mental health is really severely impacted, and I know that all teachers' mental health is impacted, but I mean... Like, you can't do it anymore. If you know you can't do it anymore, that's different. And I'm not speaking to you right now. If you're just kind of struggling and you're not loving it right now, and you think education as a whole is a hot mess, and you feel like the culture at your school isn't good, you need to focus starting right now. I would join LinkedIn. My profile is linked in our show notes. I would join LinkedIn. I'd find me and follow me because I have a pretty large network of people who have transitioned. Your first step, I think Daphne Gomez hit this nail right on the head, that you need to know what you want to do. That's your first step. And she gave you some steps on how to find that. After you know what you want to do, you need to start finding trainings and courses on LinkedIn. A lot of courses are free. There's some things that are free for like 30 days, and that 30 days is plenty of time to complete it. You need to spend the next 4 months, 5 months, upskilling. That's a fancy way of saying getting training for what your next life is going to be.
Well, I think one of the things that you said that has stuck with me, and I'm not even looking for a job outside of education, is that it takes a lot longer to get hired outside of education than it does as a teacher. Because, I always knew that I was hired in the multiple jobs as a teacher. So I think there's that piece of you have to be more patient. And I think that would make me crazy to go through all the interviews and the process and the steps. And it's not an easy transition. And I think from what I've heard you say and from our interviews that sometimes teachers are not really mentally ready to make the transition because they're still in teacher mode.
Yeah. So there's coaches, there are people who are just willing to help on LinkedIn. You need practice interviewing. It's a different type of interview than it is for a teacher. You need to spend this year or this 6 months just kind of preparing yourself and then see where the economy is. If there are no jobs to be had, then don't leave teaching. But here's what you need to do. We need to talk about what you could take off your plate.
Yes.
So that you can stay in education until the time is right. And who knows, you might just fall in love with education again. I've heard of that happening to people. People who really wanted to leave, who really wanted last year to be their last year teaching, they made a specific goal to bring joy back into their classroom, into their teaching life. It's pretty hard to do right now. I know you have to look for the little things, but I'm talking like, okay, so I used to flip my math class in fifth grade. It was amazing. It was wonderful.
Explain what that is.
Okay.
There's a lot of people who feel like that's something it's not.
So my kids watched videos for homework and they did not practice until they were with me. Right. The videos were, I would say 95% of the time, me teaching a lesson. So that was a lot of work, right? It was a great strategy. My kids watched lessons. I had like a questionnaire that they'd filled out that kind of held them accountable, but it wasn't actually practicing the math. Because I wanted them to practice under my guidance. And that was a fantastic, fantastic couple of years. Well, guess what always happens in education? The curriculum changes.
It's completely changing all the freaking time.
So, like, I did it successfully for a couple of years, and then the curriculum changed, and I really didn't have the bandwidth to recreate all those videos.
I completely get that. Those videos are... they are labor intensive.
Like, it was basically like, I think doing those videos helped me be ready to be an e-learning teacher when all of a sudden I had to be one when COVID hit. They were legitimately time intensive. And when the curriculum switched, that was something that I had to let it go. Like, I just couldn't do it. So those are the types of things that I knew what I was doing worked really well for my students, the population of students that I had, because I don't want to hear anybody adding me about flipping a classroom isn't good for certain populations of students. I know that, but that's not the population I was teaching. I was teaching the upper middle class to upper class kiddos who all had computers, who all had devices.
And we were very aware to do in different districts. And we you know, you got to know your kids to do some of these things.
You have to know that, right? That was one of the first things I checked before I did that. And I also arranged for kids to come in before school if they needed to watch the videos. Anyway, that was something that I had to let go of, even though I knew it had a good result. So there are things that you're doing right now that are amazing and above and beyond so far. Like, maybe you realize that if you're assessing your students with only multiple choice, that, you know, you're not really judging whether they learned it. and you're having them like do a whole lot of short responses. Dude, I was big on teaching kids how to write responses. You have to grade those responses and it takes forever.
Right.
So there has to be a happy medium and you have to let go of some things.
It doesn't make you a poor teacher for getting your grading in a place where it's manageable.
You have a lot of tips for grading. What are some of your best couple of tips off the top
I
of your brain?
I love a 1-point rubric. And I was just showing this to a couple of people at work. I did a PD on formative assessment. So Jennifer Gonzalez turned me on to the 1-point rubric. She has the podcast Cult of Pedagogy, and I use her stuff a lot. She's got videos, but the 1-point rubric is when you like take one standard and you put it in a middle column. So let's say for an ELA, your standard is it's compacted with 3 to 4 different components of the standard. So what you do and what I did for the, I created these for the 9th through 12th grade ELA argumentative writing.
Okay.
And so you break down each component of that standard. So let's say they're going to state a claim and then the claim has to have evidence behind it. That's the second piece. So that's stating a claim is one, but what's happening is when you grade the whole standard, you're not giving credit for the things they're doing and you're not giving them feedback on the things they're not doing. So grading writing is a big deal. So I'm always like, pick one thing.
Yes.
Break it down into this rubric. The middle is the standard that where you want them.
Okay.
Right. On the left is where they didn't quite make it. And on the right is the feedback on how they did it well or if they went above and beyond.
Okay.
So you're only grading that piece. So I actually worked with a math teacher last year whose kids were getting some algebra stuff wrong. And so she was in my office and I said, so tell me what is the, boil this down to the nuts and bolts of what they need. Take away all the shit, all the other extras. And literally on this 1-point rubric, she broke every step of the math problem down into like 5 different steps. And so she could see where they were going. So she got, they got the first step, the second step. So they'll get, if you want to put a point system on there, that's fine.
Yeah,
you can do that. And then she would give feedback on the step where they were going wrong. She's also got a coded rubric, which means that if there's something on, let's say it's coded. So I don't know, if you're looking at the matrix and you're looking at like A2, like they didn't get this area right on the rubric. And if you've missed A2, this is what you've done. And this is where you need to go fix it. And then she goes on to the hyper rubric where she gives a link. You put a link of the exemplar right there in the rubric for the kids. You know, and I've had PE teachers use the 1-point rubric. I've had math teachers, ELA teachers. I've had everybody's tried the 1-point rubric because I'm like, hey, try it. Let's try to see what this looks like. And they'll give me feedback on what worked and what didn't. But that's all you need.
It's faster?
It's faster because you have to get the power standard. What is it that you need the kids to do? Because we grade way too much. I think Rick Wormley is somebody who used to come to our district, and he said if we were to teach every single standard, it would take 22 years. So the issue is that we have to, like, we have progressions, and then we have to, like, some things you just don't need to teach ad nauseum, and some things kids just need to memorize. Like, none of those are bad words. So you got to take it off the plate. What is it they need to know to get to the next level? And you would be surprised at how painful it is for these teachers to like shave off the ancillary crap that the kids just don't have to have. So I'm not saying don't teach the standards. I'm saying you have to prioritize those standards, right? You have to figure out, and then the 1-point, I might even put out a 1-point rubric. But again, if I put shit out on social media,
people will pick
give me
holes
shit and- about it. Yeah, I don't care. Whatever. It's going to be free. So the 1-point rubric is a big deal. And that's Gonzalez on Cult of Pedagogy. So
that's awesome. I know that I used to do a lot of like, I'm really only looking at this in your writing. Like,
yes.
Or that's, you pick like, okay, so you pick the paragraph you want me to grade. Like for body paragraphs, like you pick the paragraph you want me to grade.
Yeah.
So just trying to simplify things.
Well, and that's in working with ELA teachers in high school is, you know, they're just most of their time taken is on grading essays. Now, I have one teacher who gives one of our, on our platform, you can give audio feedback. And so as he's grading it, he's giving them feedback so they could play it. And so he's like one of the fastest, he's an AP teacher, and he, it's amazing what he does. But giving that audio feedback is good, because then if you have something like Immersive Reader, it'll go ahead and write everything down that he's saying. So you can actually get an audio.
That
and
is so
a
cool.
Yeah.
So when I, there is an awesome, I have an awesome friend on LinkedIn. Her name is Erin Luber, and she is like a resume guru. And she looked at my resume, like after I had first tweaked it from being a teacher trying to be a professional. And like, she did that. She made me a video going over my resume.
Oh, wow.
Like, and it was awesome. 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 So, I can see where somebody explaining their thought process as they graded your paper would be amazing to listen to. I don't know that high school kids are like, hot diggity damn, I can listen to what I did wrong, but they should be.
Well, yeah. And that's the thing.
Not get it wrong again.
I don't know how many things I've created. Like, I've created one page formative assessment, digital formative assessments. I've created a lot that teachers have used, given me feedback, and anything that I, you know, I've tried to use it in my classroom, or at least I have a teacher who's actively using it and right. telling me what's working, what's not working. So,
what are other things that teachers can take off their plate if they're like, right now is not a great time to just, you know, quit willy-nilly, and they're looking to make teaching bearable until they can transition? What is something else that you think could be taken off?
Sponsoring shit.
Yeah. Like, you can say mm-hmm. no when people ask mm-hmm. you to do extra.
And Jen things. And I joke about this all the time, because, you know, you're that teacher who it's like, Jen, you know what? You're so good. You're the only one who can handle this task. And then they, you know, gaslight you, blow smoke up your ass. And you're like, yeah, by the end of the semester, you've just said that you're going to do all these things. And I was actually with a brand new first year teacher. She was getting an email, and somebody was asking her to do something. And I went over to the email and I said, so let's practice you saying no. And I said, so thank you for the opportunity, or we always make jokes yeah. about these being growth opportunities. It's really just right. doing more fucking work. I said, thank you for keep me in mind for next year, but I'm going to have to say no for right now, but thank you so much for thinking of me. Yes. And I knew the person she was sending it to would be fine with it, but you know, and it's, and that's, like I said, I had to say no to the things that I had to give something up to do another job well, in the past week or two. So I would say yeah. sponsorships, clubs. Now, this is going to hit some people the wrong way, which is really okay. The extra tutoring that happens before and after school, minimize that. Because, like, we have a study hall within, you know, I used to tutor before and after school in elementary and in high school. I would minimize that. I would say, and it's free tutoring of your students, because we can't get paid for right. tutoring our students. So either right. make it before or after, or if you're doing it 5 days a week, do it 3 days a week. Now, you might want to start this next semester to say,
not right before finals. No. Sorry.
No. But
yeah.
Teacher. But here's the thing, though. I have had teachers tell me that the parents are demanding them to come before school to tutor, and that's not their contract hours. And I'm like, you have to understand, and parents need to know that we are doing this above and beyond. So maybe limit that a little bit. Limit the amount of assignments you have to grade.
Yes.
You know, maybe simplify instructions. Leave work. Give yourself. Let's say you're staying late 5 days out of the week. Give yourself two where you're just going to leave everything at work. I would answer all emails that need to be answered on Friday before you leave, so that Monday morning you're set.
Yeah,
get all your copies ready Friday. Get it all ready on your desk on Friday, so Monday you walk in and shit's done.
It's hard to change midstream. Like, if you've made yourself available all year long to parents, but I would say, like, I am like, this is kind of ridiculous because I never did any of these things, but this is stuff I wish I had done. I wish I had taken my work email off my phone.
Yep.
I wish I had turned on the do not disturb on Class Dojo.
Yep.
I wish I had respected my own contract hours better than I did, because I did not respect my contract hours at all.
And this is okay. And here's, people have guilt about this, but y'all, we work so many more hours, and I'm going to talk about a couple of stories on my TikTok that's blowing up. That some parents really wish that we wouldn't talk about just contract hours. At eight to, not everybody works from 8 to 3. And what a lot of people don't realize is, honestly, for the most part, most districts will give you a 24-hour turnaround period to answer parents.
Mm-hmm.
And I know we were today talking about strategies about calling parents back, because I was talking to teachers about, you really need to reach out to a parent. And if your nasty gram email is becoming a source of like ire and you're about to send it, you need to call the parent. But who likes to call an angry parent? So she Nobody. Said she would call right before the bell would ring, like give herself 5 minutes before the bell would ring, or get a partner down the hall to tell her that they needed her immediately. And so that she had a limit on that conversation with the yep. parent. And even with conferences in elementary school, you always got the pain in the ass parent who scheduled themselves for the last fucking segment.
Oh, so, yes.
Holy shit. Hopefully
you have a principal who comes on and says, all right, parents, conferences are over.
Yeah. And I've actually had my principal have to come down to my classroom to say goodbye.
Wow.
Yeah. And that's kind of, anyway. So there's a lot
of advice that I have that I never followed that I wish I had followed. Like, I wish I had all of those things. If I were still in the classroom, I think for sure I'd be doing that. I think I would have an auto reply on my email that went out after, I'd say 5 is reasonable.
To say fuck off?
Basically, said like,
I'm
hopefully enjoying the evening with my family. I will respond to you between blah, 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 and blah, blah, blah tomorrow. Thank you so much for your email. They don't own your time. It doesn't even matter if they pay your salary. Quote unquote, they pay taxes. I'm joking.
So we all fucking pay taxes. So this is bringing me to something that Jen and I have tapped into that doesn't seem to be going away. It's when teachers take a sick day.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
So here's kind of what happened. We talked about it. Then I've had 6 parts of responses on my TikToks, and I'm just going to read a couple of the responses.
Viewer responses. Yeah.
Viewer responses and stories. So basically the first one was, I did a parody of once you take a sick day, and then I had all these people respond, and then I would respond to some of their videos, and those got responses. I think we had, each one of us had somebody message us, both you had on LinkedIn and me on TikTok, mm-hmm. about people calling them while they're getting chemotherapy treatments.
It's so
I'm just going to read a couple of these, because this one I posted yesterday and it's got 56,000 views and over 540 commentaries. And most of those commentaries are stories. I can't do them all. And I've had people private message me because they're afraid of getting in trouble. So it seems to me that there's a systemic issue that needs to be handled. So we do have some good parents on here saying, I'm so sorry, we love you.
Yeah, so I saw some parents on yours who were like, help me know when or
yeah, how. Yeah, and I kind of addressed that. I'm like, I'm not talking about the parents who are emailing at legitimate times. Or appropriate times. So I responded to this commentary of this woman and she said, my husband died and I had my principal ask me when I would be back because parents were pissed. So this sparked quite wow. a lot. So this woman says, I had a failed adoption. I was devastated. I took 2 days off. Upon my return, I got a memo reprimanding me for an extended absence.
Oh my God.
Okay. My dad died and my admin wanted his name to check the obits to make sure I was taking the correct days off.
You've got to be kidding me.
Mm-mm. I had brain surgery. I was getting calls at home in November about the yearbook. I worked at an elementary school. In labor 6 weeks early, and they wanted sub plans. She said, my husband took time off because their 8-year-old had brain surgery. And the husband's boss, and I'm getting a lot of people from outside education.
Okay.
Also.
Yeah.
His boss said, my wife is dying and I'm at work.
My God, that's awful.
Yes. I had to leave home. I had to leave during the day to bring my mom home on hospice and was emailed the next day because they needed work for my kids. My sons and I were hit by a semi truck. They called and asked me to post work while I was being stapled back together and my children were bleeding. And someone says that sadly, if we died at our desks, they'd have us replaced in a second.
Oh my gosh. I don't understand when it got like this, how it got like this.
This one says, my coworker was having surgery for a cancer diagnosis. Mm-hmm. And the principal asked if she could do a virtual parent meeting while she was still in recovery. I mean, I don't.
So what happens most of these times, I would assume, is that teachers cover for their friends. They help. Like, I know that when I broke my arm, if it weren't for my teammates, I would have been expected to do plans. But my teammates did my plans for me.
Well, and but that's the thing. That's when we talk about emergency plans, too. Had mm-hmm. to plead my case after my father passed because his funeral caused me to need a fourth day in a row off, and contract stated that we couldn't miss anymore for any more than 4 days. And I had tons of time saved because I never took time off. My husband passed away and I took 8 days only because I needed to be back for my own good. Okay, so this one. My colleague's newborn was in the PICU. Parents went to the district to demand her to come back.
Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm. I had cancer, was on bed rest, and after being out for 3 weeks, my principal called asking where my lesson plans were.
Wow.
So this one, this was a new one. 2 hours after getting home from a third C-section, I was asked to hop online and grade an athlete's late assignment so he could be eligible to play. Here's one. Had a heart attack in class. Student held my hair back as I threw up. Principal said it was probably just the flu and couldn't leave because there's no subs.
Oh, my God.
So she called while in the hospital to remind me no subs on Fridays and Mondays. Doctor said she better cover me because I'm still in the hospital. This one. I was hit in the face with a desk by a student and had to be seen by EMS and urgent care. I am out for 3 days on monitoring and I'm blown up. Meaning people are going
yeah.
after her.
Yep.
And I was like, what happened to the kid? And the kid was suspended, but is returning to class after a few days.
Yeah, probably returned the same day the teacher did.
So those are just a few. I just feel like that people are like, are these real? I'm like, yeah, there's hundreds of people.
Yeah.
And someone was like, thank you for posting this. Like, I haven't had a place to tell this story. And I'm thinking, the general public doesn't understand how we are treated. I've never been treated like that. Like, it's always been fine. Like, but I can imagine, can you imagine being at a funeral?
None of those situations.
Chemotherapy.
No.
A death in the family. Your kids are sick and people are fucking mm-hmm. emailing you.
Yeah. All right. So I am going to change the subject.
Yes.
I'm going to try to lighten us up a tiny little bit. All right. So these four guys that I work with started it's on TikTok, but they're calling it like a podcast. I'm not saying it's not a podcast, but it's called At Next Round Drafts.
Okay.
And their thing is they like have a list of like, so they've done two so far. And one was like Thanksgiving food. So I don't know. Kim is not a sportsy person. So she like think fantasy football and where you're drafting a player, like you're drafting a team. So
is this with brackets?
Like,
someone just explained brackets to me yesterday.
No. So like, let's say that you and I and our husbands were sitting around and we were going to pick our favorites from a category.
That's
so
just would never happen.
It would never happen. It
a
could
sports
happen.
Category?
Could, no, not a sports. It doesn't have to be sports. So theirs isn't sports. Okay. This is way harder to explain than I thought it was going to be. Okay. So let's take favorite Christmas movies. That was the second one that they did.
Oh.
Where the first guy who gets to pick said his favorite Christmas movie, but then the next person can't say, ooh, that's mine too. They have to pick a different one. And then you look at their list that they end up with.
Okay.
And like judge whose is the best list of Christmas movies.
Oh, so it's like brackets.
It sure. sure. Yes. Okay. So what if we're not gonna play, but like let's do a couple. What is your favorite Christmas movie? Like if you were picking a Christmas movie, what would you pick? Your like your best. Like you got to watch one Christmas movie, what would it be?
Probably the Santa Claus.
Oh, yeah, yeah. With Tim Allen?
Yes. It's so funny.
Yeah. Like just number one or?
There is another one.
They all kind of blur together to me. Like I think there's three Santa Clauses.
There are.
And I think
the first
just
one
came out with another one.
Yeah, yeah. It's like the Godfather. They needed to stop at like two.
Spring. Yeah. Usually two is a happy number. Like two's a good, and then the third one is never as good. But they just came out with, I think, a fourth, or maybe I'm wrong.
Oh, really?
I think so. I don't know for
let's
sure.
Fact, let's fact check. Let's fact check.
Yeah, it premiered November 16th on Disney Plus.
Oh, is Tim Allen in it?
I think so. All of those kids turned into adults. They stopped believing. That's part of the official trailer.
Yeah, I'm going to have to.
28 years later, they're bringing back the original Scott Calvin, played by Tim Allen, for yet another new Santa Claus movie. But this time, oh, it's a mini series for streaming on Disney Plus. More content to serve to the streaming subscribers.
All right.
The plot. Calvin is about to turn 65 and needs to find the next Santa. But he chooses the wrong guy. With a lot of elves, children, and family to please, Scott sets out to find a suitable replacement Santa while preparing his family for a new adventure and a life south of the pole.
Oh, okay.
Someone goes, this does not look good at all. But that doesn't surprise me. But
I'm still going to watch it.
I feel like I have to watch it. Yeah. And in the, like the promo says still Kringle and ready to jingle.
That's cute. Oh, how punny.
That is very punny. Okay. Have you seen the newest cartoon Grinch?
No.
It's very good.
Why did you watch that?
Because it was on the television. I watched it like last year.
I just don't see you as a cartoon person.
Okay, so fun fact about me, I hate especially adult cartoons. Like, I cannot stand adult cartoons.
Right.
At all. Like,
I'm
Family Guy, The Simpsons,
yes,
any of those.
I'm with you.
Cannot stand them, will not watch them, will, like, leave the room.
Mm-hmm.
But The Grinch, it was cute. It's better than the first Grinch because now it's a little updated in the animation and everything is better. And I never liked the Jim Carrey version of the Grinch.
It's okay.
It's all right, but what would be your next pick?
We do like the inappropriate Bad Santa. It's bad. This used to be my favorite, but the girls would not watch it with me. Jack Frost. And this is Michael Keaton.
Okay.
And at the beginning of the movie, he gets killed in a car accident and he comes back as a snowman. But it's so sad.
And why
he's like
is
peeking
that a
in
good
the windows.
Christmas? That sounds depressing as hell.
That's why nobody watch it with me.
I mean, does it end happy?
I mean, happy-ish. Like he goes to heaven, he takes over the body of a snowman. And I guess after a while when it's going to get warm, I mean,
oh my God, I'm depressed now. That's so sad. So he's like a snowman when he's like peeking in the windows.
Yeah. Yeah.
No wonder nobody would watch it with you. It's very reminiscent of some of the books we talked about on Twisted Lit back in the day.
One of my daughters, I don't know which one, got really pissed at me for showing it to her. Yeah, I see it now, but.
Yeah. Okay. So I like National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good one. It is a good one. It's a solid one, like year round, I think.
And Die Hard is also good, but people don't consider that a Christmas movie, but it really is because it's taking place on Christmas.
Yeah, I would agree with you. Santa Claus was on my list that I had made before being with you. What would you pick next?
Elf, of course.
Elf? See, okay, can I tell you a secret? Mm-hmm. I have never seen the whole movie of Elf.
I'm not surprised.
Like, I know. Are you actually surprised that I'm talking about any movies, right?
Yeah, I really am kind of having like a out-of-body experience right now.
Okay, I like Home Alone.
No, I don't like that. That stresses me out.
It does?
The little kid by himself with the robbers and messing up the house. Yeah, no.
It's some great examples of some like Rube Goldberg type machines.
It really is, but I just, no.
And then what else? Do you have any more?
I do really like the old Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer and the claymation.
Have you watched it recently?
No, but I used to watch it all the time. So I have good memories of watching
it. Yeah, I do too. But when I watched, like it was on the other night and like we were flipping channels and we stopped. And I'm like, technology, like I am really surprised nobody has ever remade Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Well, and then Frosty the Snowman, when he melts, and all you see left is like his hat.
That's depressing.
Yeah, that one.
I'm surprised nobody has remade, really, really surprised nobody has remade Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
That claymation was...
Dude, I was scared to death of the abominable snowman.
Abominable?
Yeah, whatever.
That's abominable. Right. That's right. Was that Rudolph?
Yes.
That's scary shite.
That was terrifying. I used to hide behind the couch.
What?
During that part. I used to hide behind the couch during that part, so I didn't have to see
this
it.
This explains
it scared me.
So much about you.
And what?
Because
I'm scared of big fuzzy guys?
I don't think he has hair.
I think he has hair.
I think he's made out of snow.
No. I think
the abominable snowman is made out of snow.
The abominable.
I don't think it's abominable.
Abominable.
I think you're mispronouncing it.
Abominable. He is definitely got fur.
Well, that's stupid. Then you can't have fur and be a snowman at the same time.
I don't think he is.
He's called the abominable snowman. That's a mixed message.
It's a man. It's like a man. It's like a Bigfoot, but like snowy. He wasn't a snowman.
Okay. Well, he's a scary
motherfucker. I went to the Encyclopedia Britannica.
Of course you did.
He is a mythical monster resembling a large, hairy, ape-like being that is supposed to inhabit the Himalayas at about the level of the snow line. The reports of actual sightings of such a creature are rare. Certain mysterious markings in the snow have traditionally been attributed to it. Okay. Those not caused by lumps of snow or stones falling from higher regions and bouncing across the lower slopes have probably been produced by bears. Because at certain gates, bears place their hind foot partly over the imprint of the forefoot, thus making a very large imprint that looks deceptively like an enormous human footprint positioned in the opposite direction. Damn, that's cool.
So this is what teachers do when they get off track and need to look something up. We look that shit up and get into a rabbit hole. And then we realize the lesson is just over at this point in time.
But so that's
what's fascinating.
Yeah. I think you were just patronizing me with that was fascinating. I think that is cool that the bears.
I think it is fascinating. I think any. I wasn't patronizing you, nor was I gaslighting you.
Did I gaslight you into thinking you were patronizing me?
Basically, you did. I have to keep in check here, man. What the hell? God, Lord.
So this was a lot of
A lot
of stuff, but yeah.
Well, you know what? It's Monday and this is the week and a half before break.
Have you shopped?
No, fuck no.
I haven't. No, me either.
No.
Like, alarmingly, I haven't shopped. Like, I kind of looked at the calendar and I'm like, damn, there's not a lot of time left before Christmas.
Yeah, it's Amazon. I'll figure it out. I'm not worried about it. Shopping is not the reason for the season, just so you know.
Okay.
Presents. I'm at
you
the
just
point
want the presence of your children. I know. I feel the same way. I used to always wonder about my parents, like, who would be like, if I want something, I just get it. And that's kind of the way I feel right now, because, like, David and I, people want to know what we want for Christmas. And, like, basically, the best thing I can come up with is we need new plastic cutting boards. And I really just want to buy the plastic cutting boards, but I'm waiting for it to be a Christmas present because we need some Christmas presents.
Did you ask for the nails? Look at these. Aren't these cute?
Oh, those are cute.
Yeah, I just changed my nails a little.
I mean, you know, though, that just means I buy them myself. But there's no.
Yeah, you put them in your stocking.
Oh, yeah. That's the most fun.
What the hell? So Serena's wedding is coming up. So I'm helping with that. And then Violet just wants AirPods that she's going to lose because I think I've gotten her AirPods like the last 3 years in a row. And I get like little eclectic.
How are they the same person?
Who?
Brooke and Violet.
How are they the same person? Yeah, this is I don't know. I mean,
is Violet neat? I think she's neat.
No.
We've talked about Brooke is a slob.
But no, Violet is living with Sam and Serena. Okay. And Serena was a slob to piss me off when she was in high school, but she's freaking neat. And her husband to be is also a neat freak. Violet moves in and it's causing like Serena was doing her laundry and stuff. And Violet, I don't know what happened. I don't know. She is not neat. And,
they're both cancers.
Yes.
So maybe it's a cancer thing. I don't know.
They got together when they were four and said, how can we piss our moms off?
Yeah.
Because I know
other people who are cancers who are neat. So that doesn't, it must be your second idea.
They're out to get us, but she doesn't live here. So, I mean, David was so patient with Violet because he'd walk into her room and he would just walk right back out. I mean, hell no. All right. Well, this is a Thursday. I have an instructional coach meeting tomorrow, I feel like I have them every single time we talk.
Yep. You do seem to have quite a few.
Oh my God.
Yes. All right, everybody. Well, we hope that you stay
twisted. I was trying to come up with a Christmas pun with twisted, Christed.
Jingly
balls.
My God, we need to just hang up.
Bye.
Happy holidays.
Okay, we're going to say Merry Christmas for the next 18 episodes. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays. Merry Christmas.
Bye. Bye-bye.